You're listening to WGXC ACRA, Hudson Catskill, 90.7 FM. Just remember, live your life.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today we've got all sorts of songs and sounds and stories for you, including around 9:30, Rob Gellis will call in with his latest edition of Rob Around the County, where he tracks local history. Today he's talking with Garrett Roach about the Venus statue that used to be in the public square in Hudson. We'll hear all about that in a few minutes after we hear about the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Airwaves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network. Network. This is the news.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit DedicatedPresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant in Freehold, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Felix Carroll is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that an independent group of Great Barrington residents are looking to revive a years-long initiative to honor Native son W.E.B. Du Bois. The focal point of the effort would be a life-size bronze sculpture of scholar, writer, and champion of civil rights and economic justice Du Bois, who lived in 1868 to 1963, who was born and raised in Great Barrington. The statue would be part of a larger plaza on the front yard of the Mason Library on Main Street. The plaza would be crafted from native marble. The Library Board of Trustees again approved the location and concept on January 18th. The board originally approved a similar measure in 2018. Before the project can move forward, it must be approved by the Historic District Commission, but the commission's January 20th meeting was canceled. Because the library is town-owned, the select board would also have to approve accepting the statue and plaza as a gift. The Du Bois Sculpture and Education Project, as it is known, would not be financed by local taxpayer money. The Library Board of Trustees appointed Trustee Lauren Clark, a downtown art gallery owner, to serve as liaison to the citizen group spearheading the project. The Du Bois Sculpture and Education Project estimates it will need to raise $350,000 for the project. It will do so through donations and foundation grants. In preparation for its meeting with the Historic District Commission, the project group has secured an architect's renderings for the proposed plaza and bench. Quote, in conceptualizing the sculpture, we have chosen to create a scholarly Dubois, hands on a favorite book, seated on a bench that arches out from the current outdoor staircase, unquote, said Julie Michaels, chair of the group, explained in a statement. Quote, this will create a gathering space for the town, unquote. Read more about the story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Sheila Cologne reports for the Times Union that Amtrak announced January 21st cuts to local and national service because of staff shortages caused by COVID-19. About 8% of Northeast regional weekly departures between Monday, January 24th and March 27th will be eliminated. Two round trips between Albany and New York City were cut, and the one daily train from New York City to Chicago will operate just 5 days a week. Amtrak reports 97% of employees being fully vaccinated for coronavirus, but several hundred employees have called in sick recently. A spokesperson told the newspaper, and I quote, we anticipate that COVID-related impacts to staffing will continue to impact parts of Amtrak's network and the availability of our fleet in the near term as the surge of Omicron cases impacts the nation, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Diane Valden is reporting for the Columbia paper that zebra mussels have moved into Copake Lake and they threaten to wreck the place. Lindsay Lebrecht, speaking on behalf of the Copake Lake Conservation Society, came to the January 13th Copake Town Board meeting seeking financial help to fight the invasive species. Zebra mussels are an invasive, fingernail-sized mollusk native to freshwaters in Eurasia. It is estimated they arrived in the Great Lakes in the 1980s via ballast water discharged by large ships from Europe. Zebra mussels, quote, disrupt the food chain, change water chemistry, and clog water intake and delivery systems for drinking water, irrigation, and hydropower, unquote, according to the State Department of Environmental Conservation. The funds sought by the Conservation Society would pay for a chemical treatment that targets the mussels and would cost roughly $75,000. Lebrecht told the board that most of the lake shoreline is privately owned, but there, where the lake meets the corner of Lakeview Road and County Route 7, a small section of the 410-acre lake's 5.2 miles of shoreline is owned by Columbia County. Quote, and here is where the problem begins, unquote, she said. The one place on the shore without monitoring is, quote, the county corner, unquote, Lebrecht said. Town Supervisor Jeannie Mettler noted there were a couple of issues involved in the CLCS request. The first is whether the board wants to help, and the second is whether the board can do anything legally to help. Town Attorney Jonathan Tingley said, generally speaking, with limited exceptions, a municipality cannot make a gift. Quote, a donation to a private entity is problematic, unquote, he said. Mettler asked the town attorney to research what legal options the town has and to come back next month for a continuation of the discussion. The board next meets on February 10th. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper.
Lorna Chirot-Littleway reports for the Columbia paper about the more than 100 people who attended a counter-protest in Chatham a few days after three racists unfurled a White Lives Matter banner in front of the village gazebo. On January 14, three masked individuals held a banner for the organization that the Southern Poverty Law Center lists as a hate group. On January 19, over 100 people rebuked the trio, holding signs reading, Chatham says no to hate, hate has no home here, and stop racism, speak up, at the same location. Sam Hodge, chair of Columbia County Democrats, who urged people to attend the event, said, and I quote, we must say loud and clear, white supremacists and neo-Nazis don't have a place here, end quote. Locally, stickers for the racist group have been spotted in Hudson and Valencia, and more recently in North Greenbush. Village trustee and police commissioner Pat Minahan said, and I quote, I have no idea why they picked our village. We would love to know the answer to that, end quote. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper.
And Andrea Macko is reporting for Porcupine Soup that both the East Durham Irish Festival and the Catskill Irish Arts Week are scheduled to return in 2022. The in-person events were canceled in 2020 and 2021 due to the pandemic. The Michael J. Quill Irish Cultural and Sports Center announced last week that the 44th annual East Durham Irish Festival will take place over Memorial Day weekend for the first time since 2019. Details of this year's event will be announced soon. The festival features traditional Irish music, dance, food, drink, and more. It is held at the center grounds on State Route 145. The center also announced that preparations are currently underway for Catskills Irish Arts Week from July 10th to 16th. Irish Arts Week is a week-long summer school that takes place at the center grounds and throughout the hamlet of East Durham. It celebrated 25 years in 2019. Quote, this year promises to be a wild and beautiful gathering of traditional Irish musicians, songsters, dancers, storytellers, poets, writers, and ancient handcrafters, especially after the long lockdowns due to the tragic and lonely global pandemic, unquote, organizers stated. Quote, but as the saying goes, absence makes the heart grow fonder, unquote. Instructors from both Ireland and the U.S. will participate. Also on the schedule is, quote, Dr. Mick Maloney, ethnomusicologist, NYU professor of Irish studies, and founder of the legendary group The Green Fields of America, who brought traditional music, song, dance, and story of Irish culture to the stage more than 40 years ago, unquote, organizers announced. Participants will be required to wear a mask and comply with hand washing and distancing requirements. Information on both events is available at mjqirishcenter.com. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com.
Clarence Fantol reports in the Berkshire Eagle that while COVID-19 fears keep many future plans on hold, Tanglewood is moving forward with its first full schedule of concerts this summer since 2019. The Boston Symphony returns for a 10-week season of classical concerts. James Taylor will perform twice. There will be a 90th birthday salute to John Williams and a tribute to the late Broadway songwriter Stephen Sondheim. Tanglewood is a music venue in the towns of Lenox and Stockbridge in western Massachusetts. The indoor Ozawa Hall will host performances for the first time since 2019, and outdoor shows also resume this summer there, with most tickets going on sale in March. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts Monday should be mostly sunny with a high of just 21 and wind chill values as low as negative 4. Monday night, there is a 50% chance of scattered snow showers, mainly after 7 p.m., with cloudy skies and a low around 16. Tuesday, again, isolated snow showers are possible during the day with partly sunny skies, a high of 32 and a low around 7. And Wednesday should be sunny with a high near 13 and a low around negative 5. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Monday, January 24th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at 90.7 FM, including at 9 a.m. Rob Gellis, in his Rob Around the County segment, speaks with Garrett Roach about the Venus statue that used to be in Hudson's public square. Then at 10 a.m., it's time to take off with the Afrosonic Taxi, which tracks today from Bhaktitha Kumala, Demi Arasena, and Samba Nago, among others. At 11 a.m., Brenda Donegan is playing favorites live from the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson, where WGXC has a basement studio. He's playing favorites with Alila Donna Halton today until noon, when it's time for the Deep Three show with Heidi Harris, Evelyn Glennie, and Ornette Coleman, among others, featured. At 2 p.m., the Vital Weekly show highlights brand new music from around the world, including tracks today from Jane Rigler, Hala Paloma, and Gedelia Tazartes. Tracking the Odds at 3 p.m. from Roulette Intermedium in Brooklyn looks at the work of Montana Roberts, the legendary saxophonist. At 6 p.m., our friends at WOOC check in with what's going on with COVID-19, talking to two local doctors on WGXC's All Together Now news show on 90.7 WGXC. Tuesday, January 25th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at 90.7 FM, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. We'll hear the WGXC Congressional Report with all the news about the representatives in Washington, D.C. that cover the 19th and 20th congressional districts and the candidates that want to replace them. At noon on the Overlook Show, after the local news, Rob Saffer beams in live from Ulster County, featuring the work of two uncommon cornetists, Ron Miles and Kirk Knuffke. Then the end of radio is the subject of an audio buffet at 2 p.m., and the Radio Art Hour at 3 p.m. has scary radio stories, one that Orson Welles called the, quote, greatest single radio script ever written, unquote. Then at 7 p.m., movies is the theme with Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda, as Amanda Lees and Jenny Getty review the latest films they've been watching and preview what's coming to local theaters. Then at 8 p.m., Michael Wilde is playing the 60s soul and 78s on his Mostly Single show. And at 10 p.m., Dan Seward beams in from somewhere in Columbia County with the Battlefield Earth program on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, January 24th. We are 5% of the way through the year, and we have 55 days left until spring. Early this morning, we see 6 degrees in East Jefferson and 18 degrees in Lamontville. A couple flurries out this morning, then a dry day with a high of 26 degrees at 4 p.m. Conditions will be at the bottom end of freezing, so bundle up. Gloves and hats will be helpful. Temperatures hold steady at 23 degrees overnight. About a half inch of snow will fall by dawn, then end with a dusting after sunup. A high of 37 is expected at 2 p.m. Wednesday will have a high of 20 degrees and an overnight low of negative 3 degrees. Thursday will make it up to 24. Friday looks around 32 degrees with some snow on the way. Sunset today will be at 4:40 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:11 a.m. Looking way up, we see three bubbling spots with good potential for solar flares rotating into view early this week. Solar wind speed is currently 310 kilometers per second at 17 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The current sunspot number is 22. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2. Quiet. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Survive All, one of the nation's leading manufacturers of fallout shelters, now combines sturdy steel with durable concrete block for
a civil defense approved basement type do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Ensure protection for your family. See a Survive All shelter today.
Somewhere in Germany, but I can't place it. Man, I hate this part of Texas. Close my eyes, fantasize. Three clicks and I'm home. When I get back, I'll lay around. Then I'll get up and lay back down. Romanticize a quiet life. There's no place like my room. But you had to go, I know, I know, I know. Like a wave that crashed and melted on the shore. Not even the burnouts are out here anymore. And you had to go, I know, I know, I know. Out in the park we watched the sunset, talking on a rusty swing set. After a while you went quiet and I got mean. I'm always pushing you away from me, but you come back with gravity. And when I call, you come home, a bird in your teeth. So I gotta go, I know, I know, I know. When the sirens sound, you'll hide under the floor. But I'm not gonna go down with my hometown in a tornado. I'm gonna chase it, I know, I know, I know. I gotta go now, I know.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
If you give government the license to silence its critics, you have given them the capacity to commit any atrocity they want.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the son of the slain U.S. Senator, spoke at a Defeat the Mandates rally in Washington, D.C., where thousands of opponents of COVID vaccine mandates gathered. The protesters included people who are pro-vaccine but anti-mandate, and some opposed to both. The event was held in a city that recently mandated an indoor vaccine requirement for those 12 and older. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser.
We have to be sure to get tested when we need to be tested to get vaccinated. And those are the ways back to a more normal life.
White House Chief Medical Advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci predicts the surge of cases caused by the Omicron variant will peak by mid-February. On Sunday, Fauci said the best case scenario will be to bring the virus under control with vaccines and tests and learn to live with it. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. and its allies are preparing to counter Russia if it invades Ukraine. UK intelligence suggests Moscow wants to replace that nation's government with a pro-Russia leader. The Kremlin denies the charge, but Britain is shipping weapons to Ukraine. The House January 6th committee is investigating whether the Trump administration planned to have the military seize voting machines after the 2020 election. Chair Benny Thompson said the panel already discussed the matter with former Attorney General Bill Barr.
We're trying to get lines for lies.
Events across the country marked Friday's 49th anniversary of the Supreme Court's landmark Roe v. Wade abortion rights decision. Legal observers say the conservative majority now in the court looks likely to uphold a Mississippi law banning abortions at 15 weeks. That's the home state of Republican Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, who says it's the most significant opportunity to overturn Roe v. Wade in half a century.
Today, we march with greater hope and prayer for the Supreme Court to show grace to the unborn in the Dobbs case.
Counter rallies were also held.
Abortion!
If Roe is overturned, pro-choice groups expect abortion will become illegal in about 24 states. However, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker pledged to make his state a refuge for reproductive rights.
Let's be loud and clear. Abortion restrictions endanger women. They force patients to travel tens, hundreds, thousands of miles, empty their savings accounts, or worst of all, turn to options that put their lives at risk.
Senator Kyrsten Sinema was censured Saturday by the Arizona Democratic Party. That vote came after Sinema joined fellow centrist Joe Manchin of West Virginia in blocking efforts to change the filibuster to pass voting rights legislation. After reaching record highs late last year, stock markets are down sharply this month. The declines came after the Federal Reserve said it would no longer be buying bonds under its quantitative easing program. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Advocates for older New Yorkers say Governor Kathy Hochul's proposed executive budget leaves people living in nursing homes behind by not addressing a key program. AARP New York and other groups working on behalf of seniors say $20 million is needed for the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, which serves as an independent advocate for nursing home residents and their families. Bill Ferris with AARP New York says the program is underfunded and understaffed, and these residents deserve more, especially during a pandemic.
And unfortunately, 15,000 residents died in nursing homes. So in AARP's opinion, we really need to beef up the voice of the resident in the facilities all across New York.
A 2019 report by the State Comptroller's Office found that 30% of the long-term care facilities in New York had not been visited by an ombudsman. The Comptroller's audit also confirmed a need for additional funding. If the governor doesn't add more money for the ombudsman program in the next few weeks, Ferris says the groups will continue to push for it with lawmakers.
AARP and other aging organizations that we're working with across the state will go to the legislature to educate them on this program, the problem, and advocate for the legislature to put on the table $20 million to be included in a final budget.
He says AARP New York is also concerned about other areas that affect older New Yorkers, such as a power shutoff moratorium for those who fall behind on utility bills and more effort to lower prescription costs. The state budget is due March 31st. Ferris adds AARP looks forward to working with the governor on her anticipated master plan for aging, which would create alternatives to nursing homes and institutional care.
We have to prepare for them and make sure that they age and stay in New York and age with dignity and independence and in their homes as long as possible.
According to the New York Office for the Aging, the state's 60-plus population is projected to grow to more than 5.3 million by 2030. I'm Michaela Savitt for New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And I'm Tom Rowe here live in Acre with the WGXC Morning Show. And we've got on the line Rob Gellis, who is about to introduce his monthly Rob Around the County segment. Rob, are you there?
Yes, I'm there, Tom.
How are you doing today? You're over in Columbia County?
Yeah, it's sunny out. Sunny, finally, and looks like a good day. Sun's out. We had a little snow last night on top of the snow we had.
Has 2022 been any different for you than 2021?
I think it's been more intense. Well, sort of coming out of the, leaving the cocoons. I mean, a lot of us have been sort of in the, I wouldn't say lockdown mode, but starting to get out more and things are opening up a little bit more. You can go out and go to events. Things are, I'm glad I'm able to get out in Hudson and do things because there are things that are opening up here.
We just had a salt plow go by.
Oh.
It's pretty cold out there. We got a little flurries last night. Did you guys get any over there?
Yeah, we had them overnight too. Yep. Yes.
All right. So what is your monthly Rob Around the County segment about in January?
There was a fountain up on 7th Street Park in Hudson, off of 7th Street in Warren.
The public square.
And now the fountain is gone, and the fence is gone. But years ago, there was a statue that was mounted on top of a fountain called Venus Rising. And the statue is now in storage, but I interviewed Garrett, and Garrett will discuss the history of the statue when it was first placed there and the various things that happened to it over the years and what they're looking for. They're trying to see if they can get it back up, getting it back up there again in some form. So probably has been mentioned on your radio show, but there is an effort to try to see if they could fix it or replace it with something similar and have it back up on where it was originally.
Yeah, I know there's also a group that's formed lately called Friends of the Public Square that's working on improvements of there. And
oh, really? About as far as you being more friendly for people to go out there, I guess the benches and different things like that?
Yeah, I think maybe they're concerned about the fountain being, what is there, like 4 fences around that fountain?
The fences have been removed, but now there's just nothing. It's just an empty spot. The fences were taken down, but there's nothing. It's sort of a space there now. So what they're going to do, I don't know myself, but...
Well, I vote for a giant soapbox.
Okay. You could see that as a place for people to... To express their views in the public square.
Right. On
That's an interesting thing. I hadn't thought about it, having something there that people could go to if they wanted to speak at the public square.
I wonder why people in the olden days spoke on soapboxes and not on, oil can boxes.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe the shape of them?
It's a mystery we won't be able to solve today. But today we're solving the mystery of the Venus statue in Hudson's Public Square. Anything else we need to know before we listen to your tale of...
Well, I think I want to leave it to Garrett to inform the audience. I don't want to say too much more. I think you'll be there in the interview.
All right. Well, let's let Garrett do the talking and hear about the Venus statue.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Tom.
All right. Thank you, Rob. Good to talk to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Slating. It's a Venus interview. Rob Gellis, Garrett Roach. 1, 2, 3. Action.
Garrett. I want to thank you so much for coming today to talk about Venus Rising, the statue that had been in the 7th Street Park, and now we are waiting to see her back. Maybe you could give an introduction. First of all, I'm interviewing Garrett Roach, and this is Rob around the county. So, Garrett, thank you so much today.
Can't thank you enough for having me, Rob. And I'll start by saying we are going to move forward with Venus 2022. The Venus Rising from the Sea statue, as is her full title, was placed in the public square, also known as the 7th Street Park in Hudson, New York, in around the vicinity of 1878 and 1890. The statue was created by Charles Cordier, who was a French sculptor from Argentina. And at least at the time, there were only 8 of its kind.
So tell us more about the statue. Can you describe what it looked like?
Absolutely. She was a fountain, and when she was in the park as a fountain, on the pedestal, she was 18 feet tall. The statue itself, probably, I'd say maybe roughly 7-8 feet tall, perhaps.
Do we know the color originally?
Originally, I've seen some old photographs, and it was a bit of a greenish color way back when.
Maybe we can explain what is special about her, what makes her special.
Absolutely, and I can go into so much more detail leading up to the history of the Hudson Venus in particular. What is special about her? She is the Roman goddess of love. She's also known by many as the divine feminine. And she's a good symbol of all of us being free, connected with nature, in balance with Mother Earth, and connected with the sea, and therefore the land as well. And the special qualities of the Venus Rising from the Sea statue and fountain in Hudson in particular is, for one thing, how long she was there in the public square. Between, as I say, 1878 and 1890 when she was placed there, and then all the way through the 20th century, up until Hudson became a little bit of a rough and tumble place. And before I get up to where Venus had a few challenges posed to her in Hudson, I'll note another positive point. We fast forward to 1974, and a good friend of mine, I'm an employee here at Walgreens in Hudson, New York, and a good friend of mine who was a customer and became a good friend of mine through that way. Wonderful, wonderful artist and Hudson native, Charlie Rogers, also known as Chuck or Butch Rogers by some. And he was approved, as he inquired, Mayor Mike Yusko in 1974, who was the mayor of Hudson at the time. He inquired him if he could paint the Venus Rising from the Sea statue. At the time, she was just all white, basically. So he got up on his ladder. Chuck did his thing, and he painted the peach tone for her skin. And then she was draped in light blue, partially sort of a cloak or robe, you might say, partially covering her. And then at the bottom, there were cherubs. I believe he painted them sort of a flesh tone as well. And then around the bottom was a little bit of green, like moss on rocks, and then blue for the sea, for Venus rising from the sea. And the cherubs are holding her up, is what the image is meant to entail. So that was a highlight. That was a major, major highlight in 1974 for the Hudson Venus in particular. And she flourished and thrived until we came into 1979 and 1980. There were a few gang issues in Hudson. There were some hoodlums who threw rocks at her. And then in 1980, she was hit by two drunk drivers. But in particular, through my research, I discovered one of them who really smashed her to smithereens. Sadly, his name was Jigger Moore. And he's nicknamed Jigger because he had some problems, unfortunately. Like when you take a jig, meaning a drink. So he drove through the public square, a.k.a. the 7th Street Park, just uncontrollably, smashed the statue, and then the car continued on through what was at the time Bollinger's Paint Store, which is now another shop that's on the corner across from Gray's and Diner, formerly the Columbia Diner years ago. So after that, she was repaired in Philmont by Robert Allen. And the statue is made of cast zinc. So when she was repaired, she was filled with cement. So that's why there's a question now if she'll ever be able to be a fountain again. That particular statue, there's a possibility with all of our research, all of the efforts made now by so many since this has been brought to light here in Hudson, that she could be, with diligent effort and care, a statue once again. Otherwise, they may need to do a recast of her, to have her, especially to have her as a fountain. But there is a possibility, if there's skilled enough craftspeople, they could bring back the original one as well.
So why don't you describe more about the efforts to get her back?
Well, as I say, what's gone on in the last few years is an amazing example of community coming together and how one chain link of life can lead to another, Rob. I was a recurring guest for some time on the Monday afternoon show here on the local community listener-supported radio station that we're on right now, WGXC 90.7 FM, with Kieran Riley. I was a recurring guest of his on the Monday afternoon show, and that was just absolutely an astounding opportunity that was offered to me ever since I walked into the Spotty Dog one day. And there we had the local radio station hosting a pledge drive, and Kieran was there along with his occasional co-host, Rebecca Borer, who came over to me with the microphone. So a year or two went by, and Chuck, who was becoming a friend of mine as a customer at Walgreens, said to me, "Hey, Garrett, you're on the radio. Do you think you could happen to be able to find out by any chance what happened to the Naked Lady statue I painted in 1974. That was in the park there, in the 7th Street Park. And he didn't even realize necessarily, or it had to come back to his memory, Chuck, what the title of the statue was, or who she was supposed to be, the Roman goddess Venus. So I said, sure, Chuck, I'll look into it, absolutely. So I went to individuals. I looked up online. I went all over the place doing this research to bring to Kieran Riley's show. And slowly but surely, things began to manifest, and other people who became involved. Rebecca Borer was one of the main ones in the beginning. She helped to start the Venus Task Force, as she called it. She had flyers going around town, and she drew up some very, very helpful and useful information. And so then we find out she's Venus rising from the sea. Then we find out all of the details, the person, the name of at least the one drunk driver who smashed her, and going back to the history further, Charles Cordier, etc. And before you know it, we had petitions going around the city of Hudson, which, and you were present for this, Rob, several of us brought in to the former mayor of Hudson, Rick Rector. And he made copies of those petitions and had a plan to put them into action, which is now being carried over in the process, from what I understand, to current Mayor Kamal Johnson. And Mayor Rector said, my envision is to have the park renovated and then to have Venus restored and returned to the park as the final crown jewel after the fences are removed. And the park is renovated. Venus will be the final crown jewel. I love how we put that. But it's just astounding because now there's some history behind the fences with the high voltage signs as well that were placed in the park after the whole quagmire happened with Venus being smashed by the junk driver and such. After she was damaged, she was removed from the park for a while. I'll just rewind here a little bit. Throughout the 80s and into the 90s, she was temporarily placed, and Chuck remembers this as well, at the corner of 6th Street. And then in 1996, just to make this clear, she was completely removed from the square at the city of Hudson, from Public Square, 7th Street Park, 6th Street, and she was placed and forgotten about, for the most part, in the Department of Public Works building, actually not their office building per se, but to make it clear, the Department of Public Works owns this old wooden decaying shed, which is interesting, where this fine piece of artwork, a beautiful divine feminine, was placed, just decaying away in 1996. And there's no electricity. There's cobwebs in the building and stolen bicycles being awaiting to be acclaimed by their owners. And it's just a very odd place to have this incredibly impressive piece of artwork. So now that this has been brought to light, Venus is still awaiting. She's still in the shed. But there's been huge progress made, especially since we brought the petitions into the mayor, and then just talking to so many people around. I've also been a reoccurring sort of a pop-in and phone call guest to Mr. Tom DiPietro, or Tommy D, as he's known, on the Thursday afternoon show on WGXC. I understand his wife, Dorothy Heil, has started a Friends of the Public Square Facebook page, and I personally am not on Facebook, but it's appreciated, and in conjunction with that, we also have several other community members in person and through physical, tangible means at work in this process as well. So all of this culminated together. It's astonishing to me and very impressive to see how, since I brought this to light on Kieran Riley's show, how it just took off from there. And so now as it stands, there's been a huge victory. And this is where the history of the fences come into play that were placed around a substitute, just a regular fountain that was there after Venus was gone. And the fences were put up around the fountain in the park in 1980, because Venus at the time had been damaged, as I say, and moved over, repaired, and then moved over to 6th Street. So in the meantime, the other activity going on in the park was this other fountain that was placed there, and just a water fountain. And then rumor has it that in 1980, some pranksters, two different times, dumped detergent in the fountain as a practical joke. There were soap suds all over Warren Street. And they did it once, and the city put up the first set of wrought iron fences. They did it a second time, hopped over the first iron fence, and they placed another set of iron fences. Then there's a question about the lights that were lighting up that substitute fountain at night. They put high voltage signs on these wrought iron fences, which made it very, very unsightly and in some ways unwelcoming to some in the park. And the question has it about the high voltage. Some people say it's because they didn't want children falling into the fountain with the lights lit up at night, that they might get shocked. And some people say it was simply just to sugarcoat a shoddy electrical job that was performed. Because, as I say, when you compare down at Rockefeller Center during the holidays, there is a huge fountain there with all sorts of lights and holiday decorations. And there's children from all over the world coming, throwing their coins in. There's no fences with high voltage up there. And you can be sure the voltage there is much higher than the dinky little lights that were in the public square in Hudson. I always get a kick out of what Chuck says to me, who really is very notable, I'd like to point out, in the history of restoring this Venus statue, being he painted it in 1974, and he's a perfect example of a community member, served in Vietnam and worked on the railroad for so many years, and it would be so great to see the statue restored to bring people from the past, such as a great artist like himself, who painted the statue, as well as new artists coming into Hudson now, and fuse that together. So the fences were just up there, and they were just sort of sitting there. Venus was sitting down in the DPW building. There were a few people I heard who tried to bring it to light to the city many years ago before I was in Hudson, but that just sort of went by the wayside. And now I am elated to announce that those fences, just, I don't know what we're going on now, for 4 or 5 months or so ago, this is 2022, January, but it was around last fall or late summer, they were removed from the park, having been placed up there since 1980. And that's a wonderful sense of accomplishment, and it shows what can be done when the good-hearted citizens of a community come together, be it for the restoration of a Venus statue, or for anything for that matter.
It's interesting how it came to be that they removed the fence. You don't probably know exactly what was, whether it was decided by the mayor or city leaders.
It's to my understanding the decision was eventually officially made on paper, so to speak, by the Hudson City Council. Interesting to note that Tommy D, or Tom DiPietro, is, besides being host of the Thursday afternoon show on WGXE, is also president of the Hudson City Common Council. So between himself and the board there and the mayor, I believe they were the ones who made the decision. But it was a decision based on the citizens of the community, which is, this is a huge point I would like to make, is that this can serve as an example on a local level for what could be done more on a broad spectrum. It's about the citizens who want the best and the most positive for a community. It's about fulfilling their desires. The people who are in office are there simply to back that up, or at least the way it was originally purported to be, the way the system works. So the people who are in office are simply signing the papers and just agreeing and supporting with what the citizens desire. And obviously we've shown now that the citizens desired the fences removed. And now I understand they're placing bulbs and flowers in the park, but that there's still more of a process of decision-making going on for Venus. But deep down, my understanding is they're just trying to sort out how to go about it. Will they restore the original Venus and place her back in the park, maybe as a fountain, maybe as simply a statue, and or will they recast her? If they recast her, of course, there will be something done with the original Venus as well. There's been thoughts with some people I've talked to of maybe perhaps placing her in the Hudson Opera House. They do a recast to place the original one there. It's just really astounding to see how all of this has unfolded with the history of the divine feminine, Venus rising from the sea. And there's one more point I'd like to make, Rob, pardon me, before we conclude, is that this is bringing a little bit of humor into the unfortunate situation of her being smashed by the drunk driver. Is Chuck points out to me, you know, there's that huge statue of Moses up in Albany with cars going day and night around the circle there. Much more heavy traffic flow in the city of Albany than little public square, 7th Street Park in Hudson. That statue of Moses has been there, I'm not sure how long, but for decades now, I believe. And not one drunk driver has ever hit it. We have Hudson. Why are there two drunk drivers hitting the statue of Venus in the small park? And then the soap suds issue with fences having to go up with high voltage. None of that went on in Albany with Moses. So Chuck points that out, which I'd like to say. And in fact, that reminds me, Chuck did paint the basin to the Moses fountain in Albany. So
He's part of Hudson. He's a native.
Oh, Chuck Rogers is Hudson.
Are we going to be involved?